Hi, everybody. This is Philip.
And Dana. You keep changing the language and I keep not knowing what to expect.
I like to keep you on your toes.
Ooh, no expectations.
No expectations. Hi, everybody. This is Philip.
And this is Dana. And we're Tango. And thank you for coming, Clark.
Thank you for having me.
For everyone at home, we have Clark on the podcast with us. Clark is an educator, an activist, a music lover, a comedian.
At times.
was a human body in our original photo shoot for the plugs, for our butt plugs, and has just kind of been involved in like back and forth tango business for a while, giving us pieces of his brain.
So what did the birds and the bees look like for you?
So this is a fun story that I love sharing, which is, and I can't distinctly remember how old I was, but it was before I got any formal sex ed, so I would say probably fifth grade. I went to my mother. My mom is a therapist and we've always had a very emotionally open relationship. Mm-hmm. And have always been very close. It's been tumultuous at times. Mm-hmm. But sure.
Boundaries with as mothers.
One is with a mother.
Boundaries with mothers.
Yeah. But I went to her and I asked her if she had a book. This was after, I think, me figuring out through friends, just like, and I don't really have a distinct memory of like figuring out like, oh, like penises and vaginas.
Sure.
But I remember I went to my mom and asked her for a book that would teach me about sex. And that's how I phrased it. She said, I'm going to give you a book that's sort of about sex. And she went into her closet. I remember she got up on a ladder and went into the top shelf of her closet, like shoved a bunch of stuff aside, grabbed a book, and gave me a book on masturbation.
Mom.
Wow.
And she said that I need to know that I will never need another person to be able to pleasure myself.
Mom.
And my mom has done a
lot.
My mom has done like a lot of shitty stuff, but I love her for that.
Yeah.
It is a true moment in my life where I have carried that with me my entire life.
Wow.
And it has been so important for
physically,
me.
Physically, the book is in the bag right now.
It is there. I carry the book with me everywhere I go. It is tattered and torn. No.
That's an amazing moment.
And I read that book like cover to cover.
What book was it?
Right.
I don't remember. I should ask my mom.
That's a very
If you find that book, can you send us the book?
Oh, and it was like a sex book from like the 60s.
For sure.
Wow, that's such an amazing thing for a parent to offer for their child, because I feel like most children have the experience of masturbation being a completely private, completely solo, I'm not talking about this
shameful.
With any shameful, hidden experience.
I was humping pillows and sitting under faucets for most of my youth. I would say a large percentage of it. Well, and the interesting thing is we never talked about it, obviously, explicitly, but we never had a rule in my house that doors couldn't be closed or locked. My mom, at a certain age, stopped, like, knocking on my door to say goodnight. She knew mm-hmm. what I was doing. Mm-hmm. We never talked about it, but she knew.
Right. Small little gestures of allowing you to take control
yes.
of your own life and experience.
Yeah, she got very, very upset when I actually started having coupled, like partnered sex, for lots of reasons, mostly because I lied to her a lot about it.
Well, what, but yeah. Also, what child isn't lying?
Exactly.
At a certain point.
I worked with a school psychologist recently who was talking about working in a school where there was a lot of sex happening in the gender neutral bathrooms that they had created.
Because they're solo bathrooms.
Yeah, they're single stall. Uh-huh. And so, like, the idea is that therefore people who do not want to use a men's or a woman's bathroom, but now people are just having sex in them.
Wow.
And they're student bathrooms, so adults are literally, like, not allowed to go into them.
Yeah.
Outside of school hours, like, a custodial person can be in there. That is it.
Wow.
They're like legally not allowed in there. And so afterwards, my coworker was saying to me, like, in such shock, like, oh my God, like, what kid is, like, having sex at school? And I was like, me? I had sex in many places in my high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Clark works at PFLAG?
Yeah. So I work for PFLAG New York City. PFLAG is a national nonprofit organization. The acronym stemming from its original title, which was Parents and Family of Lesbians and Gays, which is now Parents, Families, and Friends of LGBTQ People. Uh-huh. But the acronym stayed the same continuity.
Yeah. It makes
and
sense.
Ease.
You didn't want to have to reapply to all of the schools.
Exactly. But PFLAG is an organization that mostly provides support for loved ones when they have somebody in their life who comes out. They don't know how to deal with it. There aren't a lot of support resources that exist for the other people in mm-hmm. somebody's life who, whether they're fully accepting or not, want to learn, want to understand, and know that they can't look to that person for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I specifically work mostly with teachers and educators and students on that similar side of educating and supporting.
How did you start getting involved with PFLAG?
I've known about PFLAG my whole life, basically. When I was in high school, I remember we got a flyer from PFLAG.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, this is interesting knowledge. I'll tuck that away for later. And I've had a lot of friends in my life whose parents have gone to PFLAG when they've come out. And when I moved to New York City, a friend of mine had posted on social media that they were looking for volunteers for a program that went into the New York City school system and talked to students about what it's like being queer and what that means and allyship. And I thought that it sounded like an interesting thing to do. And so I went once and was immediately...
You were hooked.
So hooked. It was a moment where I realized distinctly what I was passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And I volunteered with them for about a year. And then they hired me as the full-time program coordinator for the whole school's program. So that's what I do now.
That's amazing.
Such important work. And not, I feel we are lucky that we live in a city that has a U to go into schools and to give the information that you can give. I certainly did not have this. I mean, you got this flyer, but did you have something similar that, you know, gave you a touch point of this is what we're doing, this is where I come from and how I learn things, or is it all from your life experience, what you're teaching?
What I teach students is mostly from, like, direct program. So I'm contracted with the New York City Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So all of our programming is, you know, worked along with the city.
Mm-hmm.
So they let us know what we can and can't say, what we should and shouldn't talk about. But they're very, very loose about it.
Yeah, is that stifling at all? Do you feel like at what point are you being censored? And I know that you once, I think, said to me, like, age-appropriate honesty.
Yes, so that is the phrase that the Department of Education uses, is age-appropriate honesty.
I kind of love that, though.
So the idea being that you need to be honest with kids. You can't lie to them. Mm-hmm. You can't misguide them,
mm-hmm.
but it must be age appropriate, and mm-hmm. it is up to your discretion as an educator what is age appropriate. So from person to person, it's going to be completely different, which is very difficult.
Right.
Well, I was going to say, do you feel like your class is ever split?
Consistently.
I mean, puberty's happening, like, rampantly and differently. Like, you have someone who's, like, 10 years away in a class with someone who's, like, finished yesterday.
I work with kids basically 3 to 18, but in schools mostly 6th grade to 12th grade. So a group of 6th graders could have a person who is, like, fully developed, deep into puberty, and could also have a kid who is, you know, 4'3" and, like, has not experienced any growth or puberty, like, is years away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And you really just, don't know, but it's hard to say that one kid, you know, needs more knowledge than another.
They're all going to need it at some point.
Exactly.
And even if their bodies aren't developed, their brains are. And, like, they're not ignorant to what's going on around them.
They are much smarter than we think they are.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of scary when you put yourself into their shoes. And you're like, the shit I was cooking up when I was in sixth grade? Woo!
I was cooking up. Yeah. I remember I had my first, like, naughty dream, but I didn't, it wasn't even naughty, it was like, I think I touched a boy.
I have a lot of eighth graders who talk about dating, and I'm like, who's in eighth grade and dating? And I think about myself in eighth grade, and I was like, oh, right. Sure. There are lots of eighth graders that are dating, and, like, eighth graders that are having sex, too, honestly.
Yeah.
And this is something that's tricky in the New York City schools, is you want to acknowledge that they could be having sex at that age, but you also don't want to encourage them to have sex at that age.
Sure.
There's a fine balance between the two.
Giving all the appropriate information at the same time as advocating.
But you're allowed to wait.
Yeah.
If you do, then, you know, I was talking to a kid today who was asking me questions about, you know, babies and fertility and...
Fertility?
She was saying that you have to have sex to have a baby, and then another kid said, no, you don't.
For sure.
Okay.
And you can have a baby through other things, and then we talked about adoption and surrogacy, and then...
I'm a petri dish.
There you go.
Yeah.
And...
It made me really entitled. I was...
a little science project over here.
I was always like, my parents really wanted me. They bought me.
Yeah, but this... She asked me if I am going to have kids, and I said, well, not biologically, but I will eventually. And she was just, you know, asking questions, and it came up. I said, well, I can't because I am infertile. And she said, that must mean you can have sex and not worry about being pregnant. Hmm. And I said, well, yes, but I have other things that I have to worry about as well still that are important. And you always need to be safe.
Yeah.
And also assuming that you're having the kind of sex.
Exactly.
That could functionally result in pregnancy if you had a different fertility status.
Yes.
This young human being brought up something really complicated, I feel like, in sex, is that even from this age where she knows nothing about sex, she's still assuming that it is better the easier it gets.
Exactly. Mm. That as long as you don't have to worry about this, you don't have to worry about that, you don't have to worry about this, suddenly it's really simple, it's really easy, it must be so much easier for you now that you don't. Mm. And, you know, these are all of these kids in this group are all trans.
Uh-huh.
And so they don't feel comfortable talking about sex with their parents or with their teachers, but they feel comfortable talking about it with me because I'm also trans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they don't want to talk about how sex would work with people who aren't trans because they know that it's not the same.
Yeah.
And so there's angles. A comfort level.
Yeah.
I mean, even I think just like with talking about sex with queer people in general, like the end goals are different. Like you're not dating to get married and have babies in a family. Like you're dating for different reasons, you're fucking for different reasons, and the function behind how you fuck and how you date is not dependent on I have a vagina, I'm a woman, that means that I therefore my life results in XYZ at some point.
But and even this transgender 10-year-old girl is saying that she acknowledges that people don't have sex to have babies. She's saying, oh, you don't have to worry about pregnancy.
Yeah.
She was acknowledging that
you can just have
pleasure.
You
can just have sex.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a good thing to not get pregnant.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you because I have brought this up on other podcasts, but there's this like
on
ultimate...
On ours, I hope.
On ours, yeah.
Are you podcast cheating on me?
Oh my God, I'm cheating on you! Kick me out of the house. So
I'll burn your fucking clothes.
So this phrase that we teach kids, sex is between a man and a woman when they love each other, when they want to have babies, when they're married.
When they're in love.
When they're in love. And everything in that sentence is incorrect information. It's not just for that. So yeah. How would you rephrase that sentence when you're talking to a sixth grader?
I would say that I try not to speak about what sex should and shouldn't be for, but it's tricky because, and I've been thinking a lot about this, there is no way to be all inclusive when talking about sex. Sure. There literally just isn't. There is no way.
Yeah.
We can try. There isn't a way.
We have to be specific. Yes. We're forced to. It's not universal.
It is not universal. There is no universal way to talk about sex.
And
period.
That's what makes it hard is when our sex education is universal.
Yeah. And that's, it's interesting because now in New York City specifically, health classes are no longer allowed to be separated by gender. Yeah. And that's like a strict rule now. That. And most health classes weren't being separated by gender anyway, in more progressive schools and in most public schools, but now it's like you're literally not allowed to. It's mandatory.
Well, how do you bring a curriculum into a school system without some sort of standardization? I mean, it's really hard. And it's not easy to just like walk into a school and be like, I'm going to teach this thing, right? Like there's approval process behind everything. And I think that's why what you're saying is so important to think about. Like, how do you teach something that cannot be standardized when the only way to get it into a school is to make it standard?
And on top of that, the most difficult aspect of pushing forward with a curriculum is what most people don't think about, parent pushback.
Oh, yeah.
And so... Oh, yeah.
Lots of may I speak to your managers.
Yeah, sure. A lot of that and a huge
may
part
I speak
of it.
To your PFLAG representative.
Well, and it's interesting, like we're mandated to be there by the Department of Education by something that's called the Respect for All Initiative. And so they don't need, even unlike the puberty sections of health class, you know, they don't need a permission slip.
Yeah.
They're required to sit there and listen to me talk.
Yeah.
Mm. Sorry, you have to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And because all that I'm talking about is respect for all people and understanding other people's perspectives and how people are different than other people. Mm-hmm. There's nothing inappropriate about that. There's nothing that requires a permission slip innately in that structure.
Yeah.
But they do have questions about sex and that it comes up. And so, but parents are angry about the math curriculum. They're not just upset about health class. They're pissy about everything. And so it's...
My child deserves X, Y, Z.
Yes.
That's why I send them here.
Yes.
Why aren't they getting it?
And to that, we say, if you have a problem, you can talk to the chancellor of the Department of Education. Because...
Oh, honestly, that person must have a burner phone.
Oh, my God. that energy
I'm
of being...
Sure.
Let me speak to your chancellor.
No joke, a lot of people in the Department of Education have two separate emails, one that they give out to the public and one that is private for colleagues.
Of course.
Because they need to.
Yeah.
The number of parents that
one is their work account and one is their hate account.
Yes.
Hate mail.
Yeah.
Should we get a hate mail account?
Yeah.
I just want hate mail.
I just want to like every so often go into it and it's all collected in one folder.
I love that.
So, you're not only talking to these kids, though, about what's going on in their sex lives and what they're curious about sexually, although I would say that, or I would guess that that's a large portion of it. Like, what percentage of questions that you're getting from these adolescents are sex-related?
I would say 30 to 35%.
Okay.
A lot of their questions are really simple and...
What's the most common question? The one that, like, you wait for to hear every day or every, you know, new class you enter?
I think, so I'm going to break that into two separate things, which is the first is they love to ask me about me.
Hmm.
And they love to ask me how old I am. They love to ask me who I date. They are really curious an adult who is not technically an authority figure in their life is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who is like clearly queer.
Yeah.
Mm. They ask a lot of questions about why wouldn't somebody tell their parents that they're queer? They ask about what it feels like to come out. They do sometimes ask, like, how do two boys have sex? It's honestly less sex-focused and more baby-focused. How do two people of the same gender have a baby? Can transgender people have babies?
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of baby-centric questions, wow, which enforces this idea that the way they're being taught about sex is that it is...
Well,
that
there's an end goal.
For, yeah. For babies.
There's function.
Babies in mind. And so that those questions are about sex, but they're phrased in a way that's about babies.
I think that there's actually a really hard mourning that you do as a queer person growing up, or at least I did. Let me speak for myself because it's the only perspective I know.
Yes, but expert of your own body.
So it was, you know, I had to mourn the not having a biological baby for a long time. Surrogacy was not a thing when, you know, I was guessing my queerness in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Or at least like biological with your partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And
because even if you could be half of that baby.
How many times have you heard a queer person, when they're struggling with their queerness and coming out, say something to the effect of, oh, yeah, I do such and such, but I'm going to marry a such and such because I want to get married and have a baby.
Yeah, pretty consistently.
Right?
I would agree with that.
Do you feel like that question is coming equally from people of all genders and all, like, I guess, like, I don't even know how to talk about this. Like, when I think about, like, being, like, a cis woman, like, my anatomy plays a huge role in the timeline I think about babies.
The questions mostly come from young girls. I think because they are curious.
Young, like, cis girls.
Yeah, young cis girls. And even, you know, it's interesting to be a trans adult. Working with trans kids, they really, unless they're explicitly talking about body dysphoria or medical intervention, they speak, the language that they use to talk about their body is as if they were cis most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So this trans girl is talking about sex and is talking about how she would have sex potentially as though she like knows that she will have a vagina eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's like, yeah, whoa. She's like, by the time I have sex, I will have a vagina. She didn't say that, but you know that that's what she's thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that is a thought process that most people don't think about because they don't have to. But yeah, so these kids know what they know what they need. They ask for what they need and what they want, truly with no filter, because they have no concept that,
I'm curious how that plays into your students, that concept of sometimes you just need to, like, trust this crowd and the knowledge that they're already coming into the room with.
I walk into a room with the full expectation that nobody will ever say anything hateful to me. Mm. And if I don't do that, then I don't think I could do my job.
Mm.
And it does happen sometimes, but I really like to think that children do not have a hateful side of them. It is taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so for most of the kids that I work with, the older grades, especially when I work with heavy Latino or heavy Caribbean or Haitian populations, there is some bigotry there because it's taught a lot of the time. But you walk into a group of sixth graders, it really doesn't matter where they come from. They kind of just, they know
just
a lot.
Kind of
they want to learn.
That's all.
Yeah, they're kind of just 11 years old. And the thing about it is they like want to know everything. They're like sponges. They soak it up. Mm-hmm. And so I had a eighth grade girl say to me, what does the word dyke mean? And it was truly because she'd heard it. She knew it was related to queerness, and she had no clue what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
I used the word dyke to make fun of someone in eighth grade. I did not know what the word meant at all.
Because you use a word because you hear it, you know that it's bad, and if you want to hurt somebody, you're just going to pull a word out of your ass and just use it.
You see someone's reaction to it, and you're like, I'm going to cause that same reaction.
Exactly.
And when I found out what it meant in high school, and this human being became my friend, I apologized. And we're friends to this date. And every time I see her, I remember that in eighth grade, I called her a dyke.
Did she remember the moment?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I didn't know what it meant. I knew it would hurt.
Most of the time when I talk to kids about the phrases, that's so gay and no homo, their faces, it's wild. Like a transformation when it clicks that those are not okay phrases and why it is that you're associating being gay with being stupid or being bad or something that you wouldn't want to be. If you're saying no homo, it's because you're implying that you wouldn't want to be gay.
Yeah.
And that if you were, it would be a problem between you and your friends.
Yeah.
And saying that, their faces, they like, for some of them, like the blood drains from their faces.
Wow.
Because they're kids that have been saying this and haven't realized how hurtful it is. Yeah. They just say it because they hear other people say it. They see the reactions, like you said, and they run with it. Yeah. They just
it was
run
such
with
a
it.
Thing.
Yeah.
That's like, so gay.
Oh, that's so gay.
That was such a thing.
It still is.
I can't believe, like, in my head, it was, like, stupid boys in, like, eighth grade. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's so gay. And I don't think I would ever...
Remember that whole
If I thing? Say that's so gay now, I'm literally saying what you've just done is incredibly homosexual.
Well, and the funny thing is when you are, like, walking down a hallway and you're 13 years old and you hear somebody be like, that's so fucking gay, man. You think to yourself, I am never going to tell that person that I'm gay.
Yes.
Sure.
Even if it's subconscious.
Sure. Yes.
That thought happens.
Right. Yeah. And what will they do to me if they find out that I'm gay?
Exactly.
And then I now no longer feel safe being gay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you remember that thing that people used to do where they put their hands into like a little like okay symbol and they put it below the waistline?
Yeah. I still know adult men who do that from my high school.
And then the whole like, oh, you're trying to look at my dick.
I didn't know that was
That's
the
what
point.
It was.
If you see it, the other person gets to punch you because you've been looking at their crotch.
Yep.
Wait, that's what it was?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know that that's what they were doing. I have thought it was one of the stupidest things I've ever seen.
My friends and I have a running joke that like someone will do that. You'll be like, oh, I see. And they'll be like, thanks for looking at my dick.
I love
thanks
that.
Thanks for looking.
I love that.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for looking.
Thank you for thank looking. You for looking.
I'm going to start saying that to people on the street. Thank you for looking.
Honestly, I'm
going to start doing
I
that.
I love that. I started to jog in public because I loved being...
The looks.
I loved being looked at, and I only did it when I wanted to be looked at. And I would wear, like, a cute little running outfit, and
there
I'd
you
put
go.
My hair in a little pony.
We can control when we get looked at.
And I would go up and down Kent, like a little,
oh my
like
God.
A snack, and I did it on purpose.
Sometimes we feel like we want the looks, and sometimes we really don't want the looks.
Yeah, I call it the dysphoria hoodie.
Oh my God.
When you just put on your, like, a triple
I know that
XL
feeling.
One day you're in the dysphoria hoodie, next day you're a snack on Kent.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
So it's still us.
And we're still Tango. A new sex company for everybody.
And everybody.
We'd like to thank all of our listeners for the support that we've gotten so far. We are so excited to be releasing new episodes bi-weekly for your pleasure.
And to show our love to you, we've made a promo code just for you. Check out the Tango plug, or tote, or both.
Use code thank you for coming to get 15% off of your first Tango purchase at
www.tangowith.us. Thank you for coming. So I'm so curious about the process of building language with students, because I'm sure we work on rebuilding language all the time here in Tango.
I know what you're about to do.
And
Dirty Dog.
Ooh,
be
bad.
Fancy.
So, we're gonna define a word.
Okay.
Do you have a word? Because I do.
No, let's use your word.
Really?
I just knew that I wanted to get here, but I didn't know what to do once we got here.
Oh.
I was letting myself not have expectations.
That's beautiful.
I love this.
Gay.
So, we would love for you to define the word sex.
Wow, that's a big one. You're really putting that on me.
Did you like my word?
Yeah, I do. Okay. Because we need it. And you, the listener, need it.
Yeah, I know for a fact that my partner's not going to listen to this. So, because he just doesn't listen to things like this. Sure. But, so I'm going to share a moment that he would potentially be upset by me sharing, but I know he'll never hear this.
Juicy.
I was taking a bath the other day and he came into the bathroom because he needed to pee, and it just like became a sexy moment, and I just like gave him a blowjob while I was in the bathtub while he was like fully clothed.
Love that.
Afterwards, I said, because we've had this conversation a lot of like, what is sex, especially as a couple that is one trans man and one cis man. It is complicated. And of like defining what sex is for us. Uh-huh. And afterwards I was like, that was sex. And he just looked at me and smiled, and because he knew it was.
Yeah.
Like, I, for me specifically, like as a queer person, as a trans person, sex is not about like any specific act. It is about two people experiencing about the same amount of pleasure, however that comes, and feeling grounded on the same plane of pleasure, and like meeting each other there, and like finding each other there, and feeling happy and like in ecstasy there. And that can come just from like doing a sexual act to somebody else, and you not like doing anything, like you experiencing no like technical physical pleasure, but you are like mentally and emotionally stimulated. Like, I think that's sex.
Let's distill this. So sex is pleasure.
Yes.
Simple. Hello.
Yeah.
That's what you, essentially.
I really hope he never listens to this.
I think that he would be proud. I loved that.
I'm sorry.
We're sorry, but
thank you for
that. Thank
you. It was really hot, and I just like needed to share it with someone.
No, honestly, sometimes when I do hot things, I just want everyone to know.
We have to. We want to like go to the roof of our buildings, and we're like, I just had sex.
That honestly, there is some nudes that I have that I just send my friends. Mm.
Make it your LinkedIn profile photo.
Because I need.
I have a group chat called Nudes with Friends.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's
literally
beautiful. Yeah,
it's great.
Cause when something hot happens, everyone should know.
Yeah, it's me and like seven of my trans friends too. I love that. So we're all just like,
yes, yes, yeah. Affirmation.
You're so hot. Yeah, yeah. It's great.
So I have a question about the moment when a correction is necessary.
Mm.
You
I
hear
love that
something.
Question.
You someone asks something and. If it's not addressed immediately, you're going to lose the moment.
Yeah, so normally I say, thank you for saying that. I'm really glad that you brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll address it. Because it's important that they're affirmed. Because if you just start with saying...
Don't say that.
Don't say that, or you shouldn't be saying that. And in fact, I always say there are no questions that are off limits.
Mm-hmm.
Kids ask me questions about my body all the time. Mm-hmm. And I encourage them to ask those questions because I'm not going to answer them, but I'm going to tell, them why I won't.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Most adults do not grant children that.
Mm. Sure.
And I really think it sucks because they are constantly told no, 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 don't ask this. That's not appropriate. Yeah. And they never learn why.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's how you breed like pieces of shit like me when I started to realize I could ask why.
Yeah.
And I was like 13, 14, 15. And when I got told no, I would say why. And it really pissed off authority people.
I'm sure it
you
did.
You can't do that. Why? You can't do that. Why?
Oh, you are so the kid that was like, why?
Yeah, because why? Tell me why. Give me a reason. Yeah.
Because adults don't want to take the time to give kids reasons. But it's important that they know. They're curious, and the reasons that they ask inappropriate and, you know, occasionally unkind questions is because they have a natural curiosity, and they genuinely don't know things. You can tell when a kid is being intentionally hateful. You see it in their eyes. You can like feel it in their soul because they're kids and it's mean.
Yeah.
But like it's like 0.5%.
And you can tell when the child's just like so curious.
Yeah.
And they all they know is that I'm curious right now. They don't know I'm curious and it's crossing a line because XYZ.
Honestly, one of my favorite questions to get is like, wait, so do you have boy parts? Boy parts?
The do you way have girl that parts? They, if you have a limited amount of language to ask a question that is very complex, I love the way that you people string
that is how they phrase
together.
It. Yeah. Love, that is exactly yeah. how it's phrased.
That's all they have in their context, in their Rolodex of language.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say, how dare you ask me that. Yeah. I'm going to say that's a really great question. Well, I want to know why you're curious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And normally they have to take a second and they're like, I don't know.
I just asked.
Because I...
Then you can unpack, say, well, like, boy, would, why are these parts boy parts and why?
Yeah, I usually say, would you ask anybody else? Would you ask your teacher?
Yeah.
Who you've always seen as, you know, a girl and know is a girl and you call her, you know, Miss Marsha or whatever. Yeah.
Always
would you
Miss
ask
Marcia.
Her if you're if she has girl parts? And like, oh my God, no, of course not. And I'm like, well, so I told you that I'm a man. You know that I'm a man. And so... asking, you know, it's okay to wonder why, but asking why is inappropriate no matter who you're asking.
These kids are like that meme with the math equations around the head.
They really are. They're that lady with the ponytail and all the math equations. And they're like, oh my God, well, my brain.
I mean, they're private parts yeah. always. Whether yeah. you're like cis or trans, they're private parts.
That is one of the terms that does still hold.
Private
you know,
parts.
I think what it I like does. About your phrase of age-appropriate honesty is also, kids are so smart. They're if they're left unsatisfied with the answer yes. you give them, they will figure out the right answer.
They will find
I was
a way.
On Google, searching every little keyword that yeah, I could without
I
getting
told
like
you.
Flagged.
Just sex.com.
Yeah.
Just boobs into Google.
And
the Philips Lubricating shower.
Oh, mine was shower. Let me just find pictures of shower. And then I'm like, person in shower. And then I'm like, let's cut the bullshit. Man in shower.
Oh my God. I love the steady
two men in shower.
Incline,
two
like,
naked men in shower.
Sex
two
shower.
Handsome naked men in shower. Two naked men in shower having sex.
So I like, because they're going to figure out the answer. However, they might stop asking questions if they find an answer that they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I don't need to ask any more questions.
Yeah.
And no more follow-up.
Most of the time, one of my favorite reactions I get from my kid is they'll ask a question, I'll respond with a deflection, like that example I just gave, you know, why'd you ask that? And they're, okay. And they sit back down.
Sure.
Satisfied. They're completely satisfied. One of my favorite moments ever is I came into a class, I started talking, a kid raised his hand, I called on him. He said, why do I have to be here? And I said, because it's important that we talk about the way that people are different than us and why it's important to be kind to everybody mm-hmm. and to understand other people. That's called empathy. And mm-hmm. he just went, okay. And
were you blown away?
I was like, stunned. I was ready. And that's one of those moments where I really do have to brace myself to become a little bit of an authority figure. I really don't enjoy doing it. I never make, unless a teacher requests it in their classroom, I never go by like Mr. Hamill. I'm always just Clark or Mr. Clark sometimes, but like okay. I only ever first name. And
because it's like the cool thing, it's like it makes you one of it, like
yeah,
the yeah.
they need to feel comfortable when they're talking about a topic that they have been taught so far is not supposed to be talked about.
Yeah,
they need to feel comfortable.
Yeah,
I never speak to auditorium groups. I only speak to groups of 50 people or less because
50 is still a lot though.
50 is usually the level that I'll go to if I'm speaking with adults. With students, I try to do 30 or less.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to ask questions. They're not going to open up. They're not going to share anything about their life.
No.
They're not going to do anything if there are other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you need to feel comfortable, like, as a kid, but, like, even as an adult. Like, you're not going to talk about this stuff with a large group of people that you've never met, with a person in front of you who is older than you and has more authority and knowledge than you that you've never met.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
I mean, our visual of health class talking about queerness, talking about sex, what we all picture is a comedy where the teacher brings the banana to class, yep. and the condom happens, and so we haven't, we've prefaced it when we, with already comedy, and that this is going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Or Mean Girls, yeah. who will get chlamydia and die.
Yes, my favorite.
So we don't have examples of, because it's just boring, of examples of like, oh, look, it's just so normal. We're just sitting around a room and just asking questions and yeah. getting the answers that we actually want.
Unless
and
you're kids on this needs, podcast.
Yeah, kids need to know that,
we're
like...
making it fun, though.
Kids need to know that it's okay to be uncomfortable. Also, I feel like they think they're not allowed to be. And if they are uncomfortable, they need to excuse themselves from the situation rather than deal with it. And so if I enter a classroom, kids need to be uncomfortable in order to learn. They don't want to be. They'll excuse themselves from a situation if they are uncomfortable because that's what they've been taught to do. If something makes you uncomfortable, you don't need to be there while, you know, you should be exposed to things that make you uncomfortable because that's how you learn, you know, to an extent. But if I enter a classroom and it's clear that the kids are, like, really fidgeting, they're really vocal, they're talking a lot, they're giggling, I write the phrase LGBTQ on the board and the class erupts into laughter, I will caveat at the beginning by saying, hi, my name is Clark, and that's what we're going to talk about today, and it is giggle-worthy, and some of you are going to laugh, and it's going to be a little uncomfortable, and that's okay. It is giggle-worthy. Some of you are going to laugh. That's okay. Just bear with me, and we're going to get through it together. Mm-hmm. And that puts them at ease. It lets them know that I acknowledge their discomfort, because most adults don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they do, it's to remove them from the situation. Having an adult say, I know that you're uncomfortable, that's okay, you're allowed to be uncomfortable. And you're if it makes you uncomfortable enough that you want to laugh, if you want to ask, like, a funny question, you can.
Mm-hmm. Well, figuring out your sexuality, whether it be queerness or just, like, what you like,
yeah.
is uncomfortable sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
And giggle-worthy.
Yeah.
And it makes so much... That's, like, why we have to, like, let the education almost replicate the activity.
Absolutely. We should laugh, of course, about a lot of aspects of sex.
Yeah.
Sex is funny.
Yeah.
I say this all the time when I court people.
In my courtship program. In my courtship. Which you can apply to in your bio.
I have an application available. You are open to being courted by me. Which is that if you are not capable of laughing during sex, I don't want to have sex with you.
Sure.
Wow, yes.
Our producer, Callan Rohde, has the best anecdote, which is that you should be able to do a community service project with people that you have sex with. Like a bake sale.
Oh, I fully agree with that. I fully agree with that. I think it's true. And so that's the level that kids need to understand, and they're not going to grow up and be comfortable giggling during sex if they are taught that they can't giggle sure. at sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the idea of it.
Now, I'm very curious about how you tailor your conversations to your audience. So, for instance, talking to that sixth grader and then talking to that person that you're sitting across from that you're courting.
Mm. Yeah.
Not only just Ooh. Age and education, but how it plays into life.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. I think there ends up being so much overlap. I spent many years telling myself and other people that I would not go into a profession that involved my, like, my identity yeah. or myself.
Mm. Yeah.
Ha-ha, look at me now.
Yeah. Me.
Oopsie. How the tables have turned.
When you said it was opposite here.
Talk about, like, I literally am a professional queer. Yeah. Like, I am a like, my boss jokes, my whole office is either queer or, like, relatives of queer people. And, like, we are professional queer office. Like, we are professional gays.
Yeah.
This is what
would
we do.
Would you consider yourself an expert on queer?
I would.
I love that.
So it is interesting that sometimes when I'm talking about sex with somebody that I want to have sex with or that I am having sex with,
you just kind of slide over your business card and are like, I'm a queer expert. I'm an expert on all things.
I am an expert. well, it
Hey, some I'm of the a ways... pleasure expert, apparently, so...
Hey, run with it.
Oh, my partners know. They get put lecture.
Well, some of the language that I'll use or some of the phrases that I'll say will carry over sometimes about comfortability and about, you know, communication and about consent and about all sorts of stuff. And I phrase it differently, you know, with an 11-year-old and with, like, a person in their 20s or 30s, but...
Do you ever get backlash about how you're speaking about something, or if you've, for instance, shared how you're talking about a subject and someone tries to correct you?
So,
ooh.
Yes, in two parts. The first is that I've been told that I can come across as patronizing, which is something that I know about myself. Mm-hmm. And
sure. Same. I'm a fire sign.
We're fire signs. We're tops. Nice to meet you.
See, I'm a Cancer. I'm a water sign, and so I'm like filled with immense guilt about the fact that I come across as patronizing sometimes.
Oh yeah, no, we have but, no guilt.
good. Teach. I wish I didn't. No. It can come across sometimes as patronizing, or that I. Personally, I have serious imposter syndrome constantly. Mm-hmm. And so a way that I compensate for feeling like I am not smart enough is by, like, acting smart enough. Mm-hmm. And, sure. like, expressing that knowledge mm-hmm. that I have. Yeah. Which, when it's with somebody that I'm trying to bone, isn't always a great thing.
It's not the sexiest.
Not like, the sexiest mood. Unless, like, the
Well, sometimes
some people like to be taught, but I don't. You don't.
The teaching is nice.
Yeah,
being taught can be really fun as long as it's, like, done in a sexy way.
Sure.
When you're like, actually, did you know? You know, not great. But you know.
So yeah, we want to, like, kids teach our partners. However, there's a moment where the teaching needs to stop, and we also accept where our partners come from in their life with their education.
Or is you're it... also trusting that, like, they're it's self-selecting, right? Like, they're yeah. meeting you at a place where they are respecting, like, mm-hmm. your understandings of consent and, like, your understanding of your limits and your practices as a sexual person, not as an educator.
Oh my god, I have a question.
Okay,
so is there ever a moment where you strategically withhold what you do for a career because you want to go into a situation and just accept somebody for where they are in their learning and their practice of...
Or not even wanting to just, like, be not judged, but not wanting to have to deal with the expectations of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the time I'll say that I work in... I just say that I'm an educator, or I say I work in the nonprofit sector. Mm-hmm. And then if people ask me more questions, I will expand. But there are definitely people in my life, peripheral to me, people that I'm meeting for the first time, where I don't want to dive in and say what I do.
Oh.
Because I don't want it. Oftentimes, I think for people, I think that it can be intimidating for other people. To have somebody say, like, especially people who are younger in their queerness.
Sure.
To meet somebody new that they are already getting along with, and then for me to say, oh, I work in LGBTQ education. Yeah. I educate people on queerness.
Yeah.
It can throw people, it can make people uncomfortable about talking about their queerness that they might have if I hadn't brought it up. Yeah. It can make people self-conscious. And that's something that I have, like, notice just through it happening mm-hmm. and then being like, oh, I maybe shouldn't have mentioned that because now this person who is, like, kissed a girl for the first time last week, like, she no longer wants to talk to me about yeah. her queerness mm-hmm. because she feels scared.
It's the imposter
scared.
Syndrome.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there's a way to remind partners and, like, you know, the people on your list that are being courted that, like, just because you're an expert in some eyes doesn't mean that you're not still learning and exploring every step of the way too. And that's what's been really helpful for me is, like, sure, someone interviewing me can call me a pleasure expert because of what I do, but when it comes to my personal sexual practices, it's still new, it's still learning. There's no expertise
Yeah.
Other than the fact that, like, I know my body and, like, everything is still a learning moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, in my field, I am, like, a queer expert. I am a gay professional. But in, like, the world at large, I don't know everything that there is to know about queerness or about everybody's individual queerness. And I would never claim to, because that's ridiculous.
Sure.
But, no, it does come up, though. And I used to have, like, a really diehard rule that I would not have sex with somebody if they had not already in their life had sex with somebody who was trans. For lots of reasons. But I have let go of that rule because I think it's kind of silly now. but part of that is learning, is that I'm not gonna, like, brief people on what my body is like. They're going to experience it, and it's going to be glorious for them.
And the way that we protect ourselves and make ourselves feel safe changes. And I think that what is something that we don't necessarily allow ourselves as a generation, as a queer generation, because we're so much about labels and titles and, like, honestly, like, pronouns and defining identity and, like, knowing that. So we don't allow ourselves the freedom to be like, this is what I feel now, and it might change later on.
Absolutely. I think that's so true. I think it is a huge roadblock, and especially for people in our age range. And that's one of those things where I shouldn't expect other people to have the same amount of knowledge that I do about, like, my body or my life. Like, obviously they're not going to, and I don't want to tell them, because that is patronizing and condescending to be like, before we have sex, I would like to tell you about what it's like to be transgender.
It's not your responsibility, like, to educate all of your sexual partners
on
the human experience from your perspective.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Well, because they're gonna learn it. Like, part of dating is learning about the other person's, like, lived experiences. And it takes years sometimes to fully, like,
understand. You don't get to cheat on the test. No cheating.
No
cheating allowed.
And I think that when a part of your identity is something that you have, like, that you're protective over, or that is, like, not considered, like, socially, like, normative, you have the immediate, like, jerk response to want to, like, get it out of the way, to educate. But at the end of the day, like, it's no different than uncovering, like, you have a crazy aunt.
Well, yeah, and it's like, it's all part of learning. And one thing that I have learned in my work as an educator that I have really tried to carry into my own life is that you never know what another person's life experience is. You never know, based on what they look like, based on how they sound, based on how they dress, based on how they carry themselves, based on anything, what they're going to think of what you're going to talk about. You do not know. It is oftentimes the most quiet, like, bro-y dude in the back of the class that asks the most intriguing and intuitive question.
Sure.
And I would never expect it. And so I've just learned to never make those expectations. And I'm really glad that that's something that my work has brought me, because I carry that into my life. Yeah. I no longer, like, meet older people and immediately think they're not going to be okay with who I am.
Yeah.
I just assume that they will be.
Yeah.
Because you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
I work with enough parents that I think to myself, like, if I saw this person on the train, would I feel comfortable telling them about my identity? Or would I be scared to? I would be scared to. But I'm in front of this person right now who's being affirming and loving and kind. So, what?
Yeah.
So I've like, fully dropped all of that in
That's
my
amazing.
Life. And it has been so healthy for me.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that identity and queerness aside, what we can honestly say is universal is that expectations need to be stripped away for sexual exploration. And expectations, no matter, like, how heteronormative your sexual experience is going to be, those expectations are what are continuing shame and stigma and, like, stifling people from trying new things.
Yeah. I fully agree. Yeah, we're like, couldn't have said it better. Yep. We're
like, decision made. Yeah. We've done it.
Done.
That even goes into how we meet our sexual partners and expectations of, you know, so many friends, and I know you're out there, and if you're listening, I hope you hear me when I say this. We do not only need to idealize meeting someone in a bar, meeting someone just in passing. We're allowed to online date. We're allowed to explore apps. We're allowed to slide a number to the bartender. We're allowed
to... I've done that with you.
Yeah, and I love that energy. But so, like, dropping the expectations of not only what sex is going to look like and pleasure is going to look like and relationships are going to look like, but how they're going to be formed.
Yeah, and I think you were kind of touching on this, Dana, that this applies to people who are super, super non-normative and freaky, but it also applies to the people out there that are, like, super heteronormative and, like, vanilla and just, like, want to do
waiting till marriage
thing, that when we make these expectations, the implication is that, like, oftentimes that they're, like, strict and bad. And yeah. So, yeah, it holds everybody back regardless.
It holds everybody back from having fun.
Yeah.
I never go into a sexual experience with expectations. I'm very free-for-all. Anything could happen right now. 100%. Who knows?
Thank God.
Let's go to the airport.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know me.
Don't tempt me
with an impromptu bad decision.
Oh, give me a dare and I will do it.
Oh, I will never turn down a dare. Should we just start daring each other?
Should we make one of the segments a dare?
Oh my gosh. But then people won't be able to see the dare.
Yeah, that's true. And then also it goes into, like, it's just, maybe we can just leave people with a dare. Like, we want you to take this into your life.
Well, maybe we have to truth or dare. We give them the truth option for a truth and an option for a dare.
I would say I dare people to do exactly what we're talking about and leave all your expectations behind.
Yes.
Ooh, from now on.
We dare you to not expect anything.
Yes.
You double dog dare you.
Triple dog dare you.
Okay, so I have a question about what it looks like for the future. In the work that you're working on, and also what it looks like leaving the New York bubble.
Ooh. Okay, this is great. So, in the future, ideally, I won't have to do this anymore.
Hopefully.
Word. Ideally, hopefully in the future, I am out of a job. I have to find a new job because this isn't necessary anymore. That's like a lofty goal.
We need you 500 years
after we've all been destroyed sort of goal.
We need but to clone you.
In a more realistic sense, I hope to be at a point where I can shift my programming from quite so basic to a little bit more advanced, that I don't have to walk into a classroom and really not know if somebody knows what the word game actually means.
Right.
Sure.
Coming in with some context.
Yeah, coming in with a little bit more context, but also right now I'm just sanctioned to work with 6th through 12th graders. I really want to work with elementary schoolers. I work with kids in like 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade now separately in various peer groups. Mm-hmm. And they have the same curiosities and questions as the middle schoolers do.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have it in them. Mm-hmm. But I'm not there talking to them in their school. Yeah. And it's really frustrating. So that is a serious goal I have for the future. Thinking outside of the New York bubble, I have to take a lot of time and acknowledge on a daily basis that the reason I'm allowed to do my work is because New York City has sanctioned that I'm allowed to go into schools and do this.
Yeah.
And that is such a privilege.
Yeah.
Not all cities, most cities and most states would not.
Yeah.
And that is because New York City has a Department of Education initiative that's about respect for all and about kindness and prejudice.
And how lucky that we do have that.
Yeah, and that took years and lots of work. And something I've learned working with the DOE and with the city is that there are often two sides to things. That with all of this also comes some downsides. Like having equality and good initiatives put in place for trans students means that students who are, you know, on food stamps and in welfare families, can't have certain things in schools. There are a lot of trade-offs, and it's really difficult to think about. Mm-hmm. And it's very painful a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it is the city that decides what we're allowed to do. Mm-hmm. And I just go with it because that's my job. But
we can't do it all.
No.
But we can lead by example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Practice what you preach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the idea, you know, at the end of all my presentations, I don't tell kids, like, love queer people. I'm like, think about what it means to be an ally in all parts of your life and yeah. why that's important. Mm-hmm. Not just to queer people, to everybody. And what it looks like to be an ally to people that you don't know, mm-hmm. to people that aren't your friends. And they think about that. Sometimes I ask them to come up with examples, and they'll be like, oh, I see a kid crying in the hallway, and I ask them if they want me to get a teacher. Like, that's an example of, like, being a good ally to a sixth grader. But it's really real, and if you know, you grow up with that mentality, and then you take it into the world, you're that person who is, like, helping that person on the train who, like, dropped their wallet, you know?
Yeah.
You bring that kindness with you. Mm-hmm.
It's so true. I always tell people about getting my dog when she was a puppy, and a trainer told me that what your dog sees you do in public is how your dog is going to act in public.
That's nuts.
And the trainer was basically like, if you want to have a friendly dog, you need to be nice to people. Like, you actually genuinely need to be nice to people with wow. your body in public. Strangers, if you see someone with a crazy hat on, you can't walk the other way. You have to, like, happily walk by them and let your dog see that it's okay.
And nod to them and say, good day.
Exactly.
Good day. I love your hat.
Love the hat. Keep up the good work.
But dogs are just like children in that sense. Like,
yeah, they soak it up. They're very, they soak everything up. Yeah, they listen. They're always listening. You like, constantly. All the little side conversations. Think about when you were a student and a teacher would have a side conversation. Ooh, I don't know about you, like, but I was like, hello. Like,
yeah.
I need to listen in. I was such an eavesdropper as a child. Oh, yeah. But
I'm still an eavesdropper.
Yeah, same.
Eavesdropper.
I was on the train the other day and somebody, like, caught me looking at their phone screen.
Sure.
It's not a great moment for me. But this is why you need to be careful about what you say in public and, you know, not saying that's so good. Like, students look to their teachers and look to adults in their life as examples in a subconscious way as well.
Mm-hmm.
When they see their teachers, you know, talking about their, like, same gendered partner in a casual way, they're learning that it is a casual thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're not teaching them directly. It is happening just, like, peripherally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's constant. I urge everyone to think about those moments in their childhood when they accidentally learn something.